is brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Well, good morning right to you, Laura Lori. I'm certainly glad to see that you're back.
Thank you.
Everything's going well with your fiancé.
That's good news
to hear. Not such good news as all the stuff that we're still having to deal with.
Yes. I mean,
last week we talked about this whole business with the Ruskies and all the rest of that. And, of course, I mean, there's always bad stuff going on in Washington, D.C. and in Montgomery. So what I'd like to do this morning is spend a little bit of time on the international aspects of what's going on with the Ruskies. We talked about it last week, and I made the point that, you know, Kennedy had talked about going anywhere, paying any price in the defense of freedom. Well, we don't seem to be, following that line of thought in this particular case over Ukraine. And I think that there are some important reasons why we need to think carefully about supporting the Ukrainians to the point where we may end up having to use military force. Now, Biden the other day on TV said, well, if we do that, it's World War III. Well, okay, maybe so, but there are reasons why we want to do that. And I want to just talk a little bit about that, okay?
May I ask a question when you do that as well? Because my question, why would the United States or each individual country get involved when NATO, as a force of all of us, has committed to the planes and the ships and the support?
Well, I mean, NATO has done all of that in their own self-interest.
Mm-hmm.
They need to do all that. We need to do that. The problem has been Biden's slow, incremental approach to all of this. And again, I mean, the record is pretty clear. There have been time and time again where, you know, equipment was scheduled to be sent, you know, Stingers, Javelins, the whole nine yards, and the administration decided, well, it's pretty provocative. We don't want to do that. So they slow-walked all this stuff. They should have had all of this stuff. There should have been Patriot missiles, you know, anti-aircraft missiles in place long before now. Stingers are fine, but we're talking about Patriots, which really do, you know, provide the cover. So my point here is that in terms of today's radio show, I've got, you know, a few minutes before Representative Shane Stringer is going to come on so we can talk about Montgomery. We haven't talked much about Montgomery this whole, you know, session, really. But he's going to talk about his constitutional carry bill and other issues there. So before he calls in at 10:10, let me just give you a rationale for why we need to be stronger against the Russians. If you run the reel back to summer of 1990, Saddam Hussein went ahead and attacked and took Kuwait. Okay. Now there are arguments that the ambassador in Iraq gave him a green light. It's sort of like the green light that Biden gave to Putin. Oh, if you just take a little bit of it, it might be okay. It's that sort of thing. George Bush 41 basically said, this cannot stand. We are not going to allow Saddam Hussein to take Kuwait. And the reason was because international norms mean that just because you're the stronger country doesn't mean you get to take what you want, okay? Now, one can argue in the post-Cold War period, those sorts of norms pretty much prevailed, especially after the fall of the Soviet Union. And the argument at this point is, if George Bush's rationale was correct, which I think it was, that these kinds of approaches cannot be let go, because the reality is it's just going to embolden what I've called for you all the axis of evil. You've got the Iranians, the Chinese, and the Russians doing this, and of course the North Koreans. So guess what? The Chinese are looking carefully at this. They see the weakness of this administration. They saw what Biden did in Afghanistan. Okay? So right away, you've got, you know, the kind of signals that are saying to the Chinese, look, our goal, just like Putin's goal was to get Ukraine, well, our goal is to get Taiwan. And by God, we're going to get it. Okay? And then, of course, the North Koreans are looking at all this, and they're saying, well, if the Ruskies can do this and the Chinese can do it, well, maybe we can do it too. We want South Korea. Now, if that happens, we've got troops on the ground there. So it's going to be a war for sure. But the reality is that the three of these people, okay, are all looking for territory that they consider to be theirs, okay? And on top of that, the Iranians are certainly looking to go, I mean, they want to be the hegemon of the Middle East. And this administration, compared to what Trump was doing, Trump shut them down, had sanctions which worked, brought them to their knees. And these guys with Biden and Kerry and all these people, they want to recreate this stupid, you know, nuclear deal. And they've got the Russians who are brokering the damn thing. So I'm sorry if I'm getting a little bit excited about this, but the reality is that these people cannot be allowed to do this. We have got to shut this stuff down, and hopefully this administration will wake up. But in waking up, it's going to be a problem. And the problem is the Russians are already on the ground. Deterrence did not work because we did not try to deter them. And the reality now is something is going to have to give. And all I'm suggesting to you is if we're going to try to maintain the post-Cold War norms that gave us 30-plus years of absolutely, you know, fairly decent times, except for the war on terror, I recognize that. But the fact of the matter is that this 30-year period where you've had fairly good relations, being able to do things, have led to great prosperity and peace, okay? And I think that we need to think about this very carefully. Meanwhile, I've got someone on the line that I'm anxious to talk to. Good morning, Representative Shane Stringer. How are you?
Doing great. Thanks for having me.
I'm glad to. I know that Montgomery is a cesspool, just like the swamp in D.C. is, but you seem to have navigated quite well to get your constitutional carry bill passed. So I'd like everyone to just have a brief review of how that transpired, and then tell us the problems you had getting it done, and then what your sense is in terms of how important it was to get this bill done.
You're exactly correct with this. I mean, a lot of the stuff that's getting pushed through Montgomery is coming from these different lobbyists and groups, and you know, not everything is done for the right reasons up there, so it's a battle and a struggle to get that done. You know, I started looking at the constitutional carry bill several years ago. I actually fought against it several years ago, had my doubts about it. And as I did my research and homework and started looking into everything, I discovered that it was not a bad bill at all and actually something that could help our state. You know, I talked to sheriffs in every state that had this, and none of them complained. None of them talked about any increase in crime or decrease in pistol permit sales. Out of the 21 states, none of the states have had any kind of legislation to repeal these laws or even considered repealing. No, they've not even had meetings to discuss repealing these laws.
Yeah.
So it's not a bad deal. The objective of my bill was to do away with a government fee or government permit fee for a God-given right, your right to keep and bear arms, and we accomplished that. You know, it met a lot of challenges throughout the deal. There was a lot of groups that were against us and a lot of navigating to get where we are. And, of course, the bill did not come out perfect. You know, it met its challenges. It had a lot of changes made to it when it went through the Senate, and we attempted to address most of that or all of it with the conference committee, and we were able to address a lot of it. But you know, a lot of things that went into mine and working this deal was to make sure that we didn't override one right with another. You know, did not want to override the property rights of people that own stores, businesses, and their own properties and force something on them. So we really had to do a lot of, I guess, back and forth with this bill to make sure we were not having unintended consequences. And
right.
At the end of the day, I think we've come out with a good bill. It was very contentious throughout the whole process. A lot of heated conversations with different groups and different people. probably the biggest challenge I faced throughout this was the false narrative that was being put out by certain groups, the Sheriff's Association being one. But, you know, we just kept putting facts back out instead of, you know, rumor or our opinion. We put facts out to navigate that.
And right.
At the end of the day, I think, you know, everybody's seen it for what it was and seen the people that was making the false allegations, and we were able to come up with a good product.
Let me ask you this, Shane. In terms of the conflict between property rights and, you know, and individual rights, does that have to do with, you know, some of these stores have signs on there, no guns allowed? Is that basically what you had to deal with?
Yes, sir. We just didn't want to put something in place that, you know, if you've worked hard to build your business and own your business or your property, then you should have the right to say so what happens on that property, not the government. And that's where I was at with it.
Okay. And I mean, I think that's a reasonable issue to have to deal with, because I mean, like, you go into the bank, you know, banks have signs out there, no firearms allowed.
How was it resolved?
Yeah, well, I mean, this is Lori Dubose. She's my boss here, Shane, so I have to answer her. So there's
your
question. I'm your
producer.
How was it resolved?
What we did, you know, we looked at a lot of different changes, and what we at the end of the game did relating to the private properties was leave it exactly the way it is now, which is if a property owner does not want you or a weapon on their property, they can ask you to leave, and if you do not leave, you will be arrested for trespassing, third, which is a violation, and that's the way it's handled now.
Okay.
So that seems to be working, so we wind up going back to the language that deals with private properties that we have now.
Okay. So that, I think everyone has a nice little summary of what took place up there, and the fact that, you know, what you went through to try to get this done was not easy. But I guess the lesson is, if you're convinced of, you know, that you're doing right, that it gives you the strength to withstand the kinds of attacks that are going to be laid out on you. And I know that there were people who were attacking you in Mobile, if I'm not mistaken. And I think that these are the kinds of issues that create the need for leaders like yourself who are willing to take all the crap that's being thrown at them in order to get something good done. So I think, you know, you certainly deserve our thanks for doing the hard work on this, Shane. And I think that, you know, given that sort of approach that you take, there's hope that we can, you know, get your support on some of these other bills that are out there that we think either need to be supported or killed. So can we talk about
That's
a couple
correct.
Of those bills that you are interested in seeing passed? I mean, let's talk first about the ones we'd like to see passed, and then talk about some that we definitely want to see killed.
Yeah, there's a lot of legislation still left that we're working on. You know, anywhere to deal, of course, you know, I'm on the Education Policy Committee, so we're dealing with the House Bill 171, and dealing with that, I have some strong concerns on that bill. You know, it seems that the solution in Montgomery to deal with our education problems is to throw money at it, and
yeah.
We have continued to do that. We have one of the, if not the largest, education budget in the country. And so I do not believe that money is our problem or our issue. So I think we're overprotective of our education system and attempting to take care of our teachers and our educators. But I also think that we've got to look at problems realistically and what it's going to take to fix some of them. And after reading House Bill 171, I have some concerns. I've talked to the sponsor about them, and I don't think that that's going to be the solution to our problem dealing with our mathematical problem. you know, I don't think that coming in and doing an act or some kind of legislation to bring in more money, more, I guess, train the trainer deals for our teachers is going to fix our solutions. Firstly, I think we've got to look at some accountability. The school systems have got to hold their employees accountable and make sure that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, and we as a legislative body have to make sure that we're giving them the resources mm-hmm. that they need.
Well, I mean, I think you've put your finger on a couple of, you know, valid points here. The fact is the problem that the math as well as ELA, I mean, we're 52nd in math in the NAEP scores on the national assessments, and we're 48th in English, okay? If you look back just to 2009, you can see that with our 2009 standards, we had already gotten up from the bottom in 2003, okay? There's nothing new about Alabama being on the bottom. What is absolutely unbelievable is that we went from 26th in 2009 down to 52nd in 2019. I mean, the problem, as we have been saying for the last 10 years, resides in Common Core. And that's where the problem is. And, you know, when we talk about swamps and lobbyists, I mean, A-plus and these people up in Montgomery, they have controlled the Alabama State Department of Education, and nothing changes. It doesn't matter. We've had people, you know, visit. We had a team of people. Terry Lathan was one of them. Dr. Robin Leidecker, our wonderful teacher, Kathy Miller, met with, you know, Superintendent Mackey and Nick Moore from the governor's office. He's the guru. And we laid this out. They all agreed that there is a problem. And what do they say, though? It's not Common Core math, because we don't have Common Core math. Remember, Governor Ivey basically said, we've eradicated Common Core math. And she didn't. Eagle Forum, you know, laid out a comparative analysis, and it showed on the one side is Common Core, and the other side is 2019 math, and they are virtually the same. So, Shane, when we're looking at this, we have to conclude that when the Business Council of Alabama had, and you remember Billy Canary, I think he was still in charge when you got there, and all they did was throw money at the legislators to make sure that nobody, you know, went after Common Core. And year after year, Bob Fincher would put in these bills, and the next thing you know, they died in the Education Committee. So I guess, you know, I completely agree with you that this was nothing more than ready, shoot, aim, and they didn't aim correctly, and now they're going to do this. And I think that hopefully, let's just talk about it in a minute. What are some of the tactics we could use to either slow this bill or kill it? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, doing one thing is educating everybody like you're doing and trying to get as many legislators to listen and pay attention to what's going on and to look at the facts, because sometimes outside of the Education Policy Committee, a lot of members are not familiar with what has happened and what has gone on with Common Core and with this deal and other bills over the year. So try to educate them and make sure, and, you know, I've spoken to other members about House Bill 171 that have similar opinions as I do about this. And so I think that's going to be the key, is doing that. You know, of course, there's lots of options. You know, I just went through a lot of those options with my bill, and
right,
from people filibustering it, from, you know, attempting to add amendments to it that made it more reasonable to kill it. So there's a lot of methods that can be done and probably should be done, and, you know, we'll just have to look at those and see and get a strategy together to start trying to build a coalition of members to address that.
Well, let me ask you this, because when I know you weren't at the meeting when the public hearing was last Wednesday. Representative Daniels, who sits in the back there on the upper left-hand side, asked a question about Minnesota math because we had brought it up. And it seems like, and Becky Gerritsen, I sent something to Mr. Daniels, and so Becky Gerritsen is trying to talk to him. And I mean, I think he's the leader of the Black Caucus. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah, I mean, I realize that working with the Democrats is not always seen as the best thing to do. But on the other hand, you know, we have heard before Ella Bell, when she was a representative from Montgomery on the State Board of Education, had complained about how her grandson had been hurt by Common Core. And there are studies that show within the Black community it is adversely affecting them, along with other kids too. But the point I'm making here is that if there is a consensus within the Black caucus that Common Core math is bad, is it possible for us to, you know, get you all to sit down with Daniels? And it has to be Tuesday, because my understanding, they want to vote on this on Wednesday. Can we do that and work some sort of a deal out that the Black caucus is supporting, you know, those conservative members of your group that want to see Common Core stopped?
It's hard to say, you know. Things are kind of strange in Montgomery. The things that you would think would be a simple no-brainer in working things out don't happen, and the things that you think would be complicated and hard to accomplish, you know, seems to fall into place. So it's definitely worth looking at and what's there. But, you know, I know the Sheriff's Association worked with the Democrats against my bill and really tried to use that as a tool to block it, and it didn't work. So I don't know. It's definitely something you can consider.
Well, Shane, here's the other part of this that just gets me. Representative Baker, who I guess is the vice chair on the committee, said he gave a summary of the bill and talked about this and that, and then he says it's time to get moving. It's late. And so when I had a chance to get up there and speak, I looked at him and I said, "It's late? Where have you guys been for the last 10 years? You know, we've had Common Core. You've done nothing. That's the problem." And so...
Yep.
I mean, it seems like, yes, the train has already left the station, but let me ask you this. I mean, do you have a good enough relationship with Speaker McCutcheon to go and tell him not only is this about Common Core, okay, it is, but there is this budget business, Shane, $92 million of recurring funds that are going to be levied on the Alabama taxpayer when, yes, we've got plenty of money now. Education Trust Fund has had more money going to the, like you said, we are flush with money, and in the same is true in the regular budget, but that's not necessarily going to be the case. And it just seems to me that from a fiscally conservative approach, that you get three or four of your friends to go and talk to McCutcheon and say, we just can't be, we need to be more prudent about what we're spending this money on. I mean, you shake the money tree, one of these days that money tree ain't going to be, you know, putting out any money.
You're exactly right. That bubble is going to bust at some point. And, you know, if we don't get better prepared, we're going to be in trouble. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sure there's self. You know, I talked to Representative Fitcher. He has some issues with this bill and some problems and some others, so
right.
I'm sure that there's enough of us that can go talk to him. But, you know, of course, at the end of the day, I'm a still a rookie legislator. This is my first quadrennium, so don't carry a lot of power just yet, but I'm trying to get to where I can make a big difference in what we're doing. But yeah, there's definitely not a problem with going to speak with the Speaker Matt McCutcheon and tell him my concerns and issues and to see what his thoughts are,
okay,
what his opinions are.
Let's just kind of shift for we've got a few more minutes to, I'd like to shift to some other bills that are out there. Okay, one of them is this whole question of, you know, stopping the ability of children under 19 from taking these sexually transforming drugs. And it's part and parcel of the whole transgender movement. But the bill that we're trying to support here is the VCAP bill, and the number escapes me right now. But I'm just wondering, is that something that you've had a chance to look at? I mean, I know with everything you've been doing, you know, it's kind of difficult to get a handle on some of these other bills. But is it possible for the VCAP bill to be looked at from your perspective and support it?
I've heard a lot on the bill. I've actually not read that particular bill. We have probably roughly 800 bills going on right now.
Right.
And of course with my permit bill, that was pretty consuming, so it kept me pretty stretched. But I have talked to legislators. I do think it's possible that it'll come up and potentially get addressed. There's just a lot going on. We're down, I think, to maybe 3 weeks left in the legislative session. So
yeah, I think it's 8 days left.
What's going to happen is going to have to happen soon.
Right. Okay, let me ask you this. There is major concern about the CBD marijuana bill. I mean, as a law officer, I know that, you know, marijuana is not something that you consider to be one of those things that we should be, you know, promoting, like Colorado and California and all those states. What is your sense of this marijuana thing and the degree to which it might be worthwhile to take a closer look at how the bill that passed may need to be reformed a little bit?
I've talked to Senator Meltzen about some of the issues and concerns with the marijuana bill. I've actually spoke to a lot of the legislators and even some of the doctors involved in that process. So I don't know what our chances of getting any kind of reform going with it or what's coming with that. I've kind of lived in semi-bubble, I guess, dealing with my issues and my bills. I still got a Dobson bill coming up that I'm trying to fix. So it's something that's being looked at from a lot of different angles. And trying to keep an open mind about how to address some of these concerns and issues. So it's something that I've not really been involved in as much in working. You know, when it came up last year, I voted against the bill, but it still passed. But I still know that there's a lot of work going on and a lot of negotiations being done to try to, I guess, minimize any damages.
Well, I mean, it's like everything else up there. You don't have a staff to help you, so 800 bills that you have to pour through. So, and, you know, with you trying to get through the constitutional carry bill, it's understandable that you're not going to have a complete grip on all of them. But I do think that the bills that we've mentioned, and one more, if I could, has to do with this whole business of, you know, vaccine, protecting individuals from having to take the vaccines. I know that they passed something last year that really kind of forces the individual citizen to go before a medical board to make a case that the vaccine is either harmful for religious reasons or for medical reasons. Our argument is that HB 31, I think it's 32 this year, is really the bill we wanted, which basically says, you know, employers cannot force you to take a vaccine. Is that something that you can kind of look into for us and see if we can't move that along?
Yeah, I was a co-sponsor of House Bill 31 and talked to Richie pretty regular about the bill and thought it was a good deal. I really hate that it hadn't moved, but I'll look into that and see what's going on. And now that I'm kind of freed up and I'm able to engage in a lot of the other legislation that we've got going on now.
Right.
I do think the bill we passed, you know, was problematic and putting too much on the employee. And
exactly.
I don't know if it made any difference at all, truthfully.
Well, the proponents of it say that there's a high percentage of the people who are sending their requests to the board, whatever it is, the HR people, that they are being positively supported. But that's not the issue. The issue is a freedom issue, and I think you put your hand your finger on the mark of it by supporting it last year. So I do think it. I think our problem right now is that the pandemic is kind of going away, and you know the Supreme Court has come down on a no to some of these OSHA mandates and stuff like that. So it's not as pregnant this year as it was last year. That doesn't mean though it shouldn't be in place. The other thing too, lastly, before we have to go, there is this question about Senator Orr trying to push this bill that's going to let Dr. Harris from the Public Health Department, you know, put people in jail if they don't wear masks or follow instructions. Have you had a chance to look at this and see if we can't stop that too?
Yeah, and that's extremely problematic, and we have got to address that. You know, we have got to get back to some, I guess, taking big government out of our decisions in our life every day. I mean,
yeah.
If I want to wear a mask to protect myself or from myself, from you or anybody else, I can do that. And that, there ain't nothing wrong with that, but they shouldn't be able to force masks on our society, our members. And Chip Brown here in Mobile County's got a bill that would prohibit school systems for forcing students to wear masks in the schools. So
yeah,
there's a lot of issues that needs to be addressed, whether the pandemic stays or goes, related to
exactly.
This, because we've seen the overreach of some of the government incentives or issues that were put out against masks and different stuff.
Right. Well, I know last year there was a great deal of, you know, angst over the overreach for the governor and Dr. Harris, and there were some bills in the Senate. I don't know if there's anything in the House on it, but then they all kind of died. And now with the pandemic going away, there seems to be, you know, less interest. But then Orr comes out and does this. I mean, Shane, if you kill anything, I hope that you can kill that one. Okay, and Lori's looking at the clock, so I'm going to have to kill us in a second. So, Shane, I really appreciate your time coming on, and we certainly want you to get to one of our planning committee meetings in the near future, so that our folks can hear from you exactly what we've been talking about on the radio. Okay.
Yes, sir. Thank you for having me, and look forward to that.
Okay. Take care. We'll see you next time, and. Just have a good,
yes,
safe
sir.
Trip up to Montgomery. Thank you again. Bye-bye.
Yes, sir. Talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye. Well, Lori.
Very good.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, and he's certainly done a good job, you know, trying to get his bill through. I hope that he can help us with some of these other things and stop them, okay? Folks, before we go, I do want to announce two things. One, Common Sense Campaign will be having a county commission forum tomorrow, the 15th of March, and I'll send this to Lori so she can put it on Facebook. County commission, all three county commission candidates for District 2, okay, will be there. It's going to be at the Foley City Council office in Foley at 6 p.m. If you go to the Common Sense Campaign website, you'll get information on it. But we think that it's important, and we're going to have a couple more of these, because county commissioners, that you vote on them countywide, even though they are district,
yes,
mandated, okay? So for those of you, you know, in the Foley area, or even listening here, you can go. It's free of charge. You know, you'll have a chance to ask questions. So we think it's an important, you know, citizen outreach that we're doing. This is what Common Sense does, okay? The other thing that I want to, you know, let people know is that I have resigned as the president of Common Sense Campaign. It's time for me to move on. My wife and I have dedicated 10 years to this, and I'm not going to go away from it, but I just cannot do time-wise the and give that amount of time that it takes to run the organization. So I'm stepping back from that. So when Lori introduces me next week, we'll have to figure out a new introduction.
Okay.
All right. Well, Lori, thank you for indulging me for extra time today. I appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
And we'll see you all next week. God bless. Take care. Have a good week.
Thank
Bye.
You. You've been listening to the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations on 98 in Daphne and in Malbus on 181 with a state-of-the-art car wash. If you missed part of this program, you can listen to it later at WABF1480.com.